Well, we're continuing our Sunday evening look at Mark's Gospel, and tonight we come to the subject of religion. Are you religious? Maybe you're anti-religion. So we're asking the question, what kind of religion is Christianity? Now, to answer that question, we have three episodes from Mark's Gospel, so please come to the reading which we had. Please have that little Gospel open in front of you on page 7. And let's look together at these three episodes and ask the question, what kind of religion is Christianity? Well, episode number 1, it all begins with a question about fasting. Verse 18, now John's disciples and the Pharisees were fasting. And people came to Jesus, people came and said to Jesus, why do John's disciples and the disciples of the Pharisees fast, but your disciples do not fast? You know what a fast is, you go for a blood test, and you're told to fast 12 hours before the blood test. You think, no late night snacking, no early morning breakfast. You know what a fast is? It's to say no to food. Well, all religious Jews fasted. It was part of their life. They're religious, they're Jews, they fast. But the disciples of John the Baptist and the disciples of the Pharisees, they went one step further. Their fasting went beyond the norm. They were super or hyper-religious. But here are Jesus' disciples, and they're eating and drinking. Instead of fasting, they're feasting. And to the onlooker, and there are a number of them there, they ask Jesus the question, to the onlooker, it doesn't look like Jesus' disciples take religion seriously. Why do John's disciples and the disciples of the Pharisees fast, but your disciples do not fast? So what's Jesus' reply? Verse 19, Jesus said to them, can the wedding guests fast while the bridegroom is with them? As long as they have the bridegroom with them, they cannot fast. You go to a wedding reception. What do you expect? Well, you expect food, don't you, and lots of it. I heard of one wedding where after the service, the mother of the bride said, all back to my place for fried egg sandwiches. And why not? But a wedding. Can the wedding guests fast while the bridegroom is with them? It's a wedding, isn't it? The bridegroom is there. Now's the time to tuck in and rejoice. It's a happy day. But what's Jesus really getting at? Can the wedding guests fast while the bridegroom is with them? As long as they have the bridegroom with them, they cannot fast. What's he getting at? Well, if Jesus' disciples are the wedding guests, does that mean Jesus is the bridegroom? And if he is the bridegroom, well, what does that mean? Well, the Jewish scriptures, the Old Testament, they spoke of the bridegroom. And the bridegroom, in those Old Testament scriptures, the bridegroom was God himself. The Lord betrothed to his people. Which, of course, is why the Jewish people were waiting for his coming. They were waiting for the wedding day. They were waiting for the coming kingdom. The long-awaited salvation when the bridegroom would come for his bride. So if Jesus is the bridegroom, does that mean that long-waited-for day has arrived? Jesus is raising questions about his identity. But now a darker note, verse 20. The days will come when the bridegroom is taken away from them. And then they will fast in that day. Now, normally a Jewish wedding, it would be the guests who depart, not the groom. But, says Jesus, the days will come when the bridegroom will be taken away. It's a strong word. There's more than a hint of violence. And on that day, joy will be overtaken by sorrow. A time will come when it will be right to mourn and to fast. But not today, because the bridegroom is here. And then Jesus answers the question beneath the question. Why do John's disciples and the disciples of the Pharisees fast, but your disciples do not fast? See, what the question beneath the question is this. Why doesn't Jesus take religion seriously? They have the ultra-religious, they fast. Your disciples don't fast. Why don't you take religion seriously? Well, look at Jesus' answer. Verse 21. No one sews a piece of unshrunk cloth on an old garment. If he does, when you wash the garment, the patch tears away from it, the new from the old, and a worse tear is made. So if this Jesus movement is a new piece of cloth, it's not here to patch up the old religion. Jesus and the old religion are incompatible. More than that, it destroys it. Verse 22, no one puts new wine into old wineskins. If he does, the wine will burst the skins, and the wine is destroyed, and so are the skins, but new wine is for fresh wineskins. New wine is still fermenting. Old wineskins, they're leather. The leather becomes brittle. So if you put new fermenting wine in old brittle wineskins, what's going to happen? They're going to burst. So if this Jesus movement is the new wine, it's not here to breathe new life into the old religion. The two are incompatible. More than that, it destroys the old. New wine is for fresh wineskins. To follow Jesus means a new beginning. So what kind of religion is this Jesus movement? Well, judging from episode 1, it's no religion at all, is it? Look at episode 2, verse 23. One Sabbath he was going through the cornfields, and as they made their way, his disciples began to pluck ears of corn. And the Pharisees were saying to him, look, why are they doing what is not lawful on the Sabbath? Okay, who were the Pharisees? Well, they're the super religious Jews. These were the men who were committed to pure religion. And they were so careful to keep the law of Moses that what they did, they constructed around the law a vast hedge of do's and don'ts. Sort of moral health and safety to minimize the risk of breaking God's commands. And so when they read the fourth commandment, let's just read it ourselves. When they read the fourth commandment about keeping this one day in seven different, remember the Sabbath day, to keep it holy, 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter or your male servant or female servant or your livestock or the sojourner who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. When they read that commandment, they interpreted it with all their usual strictness. And they erected around that commandment this great hedge of religious do's and don'ts to make sure nobody broke that fourth commandment. And so when they see Jesus' disciples as they're walking through this grain field, when they see them plucking ears of corn, to their mind, to the mind of the super religious, that's reaping. And if it's reaping, it's work. And it's work on the Sabbath day, the day that God has commanded that we should rest. Hence their question. Look, why are they doing what is not lawful on the Sabbath? Why are they doing what God has forbidden on the Sabbath day? That Jesus, he's acting like he owns the Sabbath. So what's Jesus' answer? Well, it's an answer that's calculated to make these religious people think long and hard. Now, these are religious men. They know their Bibles. So Jesus' answer may not necessarily strike us. We think, well, what's all that about? But he's making these religious men think. So what is he saying? Well, look at verse 25. He said to them, have you never read? So Jesus takes them away from their traditions and takes them back to the Bible. Have you never read what David did when he was in need and was hungry, he and those who were with him? How he entered the house of God in the time of Abiathar the high priest and ate the bread of the presence, which is not lawful for any but the priest to eat, and also gave it to those who were with him. David and his men were hungry. They were on a mission. And when they arrived at the tabernacle, what's called here the house of God, it wasn't in Jerusalem, it was elsewhere. When they arrived there, they were starving. Hungry men. But there was nothing for them to eat except the bread which for the last 7 days had been sitting on a special table in the tabernacle. What's called here in verse 26, the bread of the presence. It had been in the presence of God. Now, strictly speaking, that bread, no one was allowed to eat it except the priests. But David's men are starving. So what's the greater good? Is it to keep a religious law, or is it to feed hungry men? And David recognizes that the law is there to give life. It's there to do good. The law is not an end in itself. Go back to your Bible, says Jesus. Have you never read what David did when he was in need and was hungry? He and those who were with him, they're hungry, hungry, hungry. How he went into the house of God in the time of Abiathar the high priest and ate the bread of the presence, which no one's supposed to eat except the priests. Now, on the face of it, when David does that, he's breaking the law. But in reality, David is capturing the spirit of the law. Because the spirit of the law is to save life, is to give life. And that's okay, isn't it? We understand that. If you collapse while you're out shopping and they call for an ambulance, is it okay for the ambulance to park on a double yellow line while they wheel you out? Is that okay? Is it more important to keep the traffic regulations or to save your life? And we understand what Jesus is saying, isn't he? He's saying it's more important to save the life of these hungry men than to keep the traffic regulations of the religious law. But, remember these religious Pharisees, Jesus is boring something into their minds. He's saying something more here. He's again raising questions as to his identity. How was it that David was able to do what he did? It was a very bold thing for David to do something which is forbidden except to the priests. How could David take it upon himself to take the bread which is meant for the priests? Okay, we've understood that, you know, he's trying to save life, but how did he have the boldness, the audacity to do something like that? David did it because he was the king. And for the king, on a holy mission, carrying on his shoulders the fate of the kingdom, it was right for him to eat the holy bread. He's using the holy bread to give him the strength to carry on his holy mission. So where's this going? Well, if it was okay for King David, on a holy mission, to eat holy bread, what if one greater than David is here? What if the king to end all kings is here? You see, Jesus and his disciples, they're not sort of out on a sort of Sunday afternoon stroll, a Sabbath afternoon stroll, and his disciples are walking through the cornfield and think, well, it's a little, just a bit of snacking while they're having a stroll. Here's the king, the true king, and the fate of the kingdom of God, is upon his shoulders. He's on a holy mission. And there's barely been time to eat. So if it was right for King David to eat the holy bread on his holy mission, see what Jesus is saying? He's raising questions about his identity. It's right, isn't it, Pharisees, for the true king to use this holy day, this Sabbath day, to speed me on my holy mission to establish the kingdom of God. So what he's saying is very nuanced. He's getting at these religious people, making them think. And then he re-emphasizes the principle, verse 27. The Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. He's saying the law isn't an end in itself. The double yellow line isn't there to stop ambulances from parking and saving your life. And then he drops a bombshell. Okay, to Jewish ears, it is a bombshell. Verse 28. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. God made the world in 6 days. He rested on the seventh. Sabbath simply means rest. The seventh day was God's rest day. After 6 days of glorious, wonderful creation, God rested. God enjoyed. God took pleasure in all that he had made. So that rest day, that Sabbath day, is God's creation. And verse 27, he gave it to us for our good. But when you look at verse 28, Jesus says, when you look at me, you think I'm acting like I own the Sabbath. Well, I do. I do own the Sabbath. It's actually my day. I gave it. And therefore, I decide what can and cannot be done on my day. The Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. The one who made heaven and earth, the giver of the Sabbath, is there proclaiming that he is Lord of the Sabbath. And it's an explosion for these religious men. Think about it. The God who burns with an infinite brightness. There he is in front of us. He's become flesh. The one who spoke worlds into being, who made it all by the word of his power. There he is. He's walking briskly through a cornfield. It's a staggering claim. Because we see the godness of God in the face of Jesus. Well, let's rewind a bit. How does Jesus square up to these hyper-religious Pharisees? Well, he simply brushes their religion aside. When they want to debate about the do's and don'ts and what you're allowed to do and not allowed to do, and this is lawful, is that not lawful? Jesus renders the whole discussion unnecessary. The Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. There's nothing to discuss. It's my day. I decide. So what kind of religion is Christianity? Well, judging from Jesus' response to religious people, it's no religion at all. Which brings us to our third episode. It's another Sabbath controversy. Chapter 3, verse 1. Again, he entered the synagogue, and a man was there with a withered hand. And they watched Jesus to see whether he would heal him on the Sabbath so that they might accuse him. The atmosphere is charged. Put yourself in that place. Can you feel the tension? Can you see those hostile faces there? Maybe they put this man, maybe he's a plant. Maybe this poor man has just been shoved into the front row. You sit there, but he's been planted there because they're looking to see what Jesus will do. They're waiting to ambush Jesus, looking to find something of which to accuse him. Now, in the Pharisees' books, it was okay to heal on the Sabbath, provided you were saving life. Well, this man's only got a withered hand, hasn't he? He's going to live. It's not fatal. He'll be there tomorrow. It'll be fine. So if Jesus heals him on the Sabbath, their rules forbid it. It's actually work. It's Sabbath breaking. So just how religious is this teacher? How seriously does he take the law? Will he work when God says rest? Verse 3. And he said to the man with the withered hand, "Come here." Jesus ups the ante. Far from backing down and saying nothing, Jesus forces the issue. He's confrontational. Verse 4. And he said to them, "Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, to save life or to kill?" But they were silent. Says Jesus, "Do you want me to shrink down the command to your do's and don'ts, to heal or not to heal?" Or shall we open up the command so that we see it in all its beauty and blessing? Is the Sabbath day a day for doing good or for doing harm? Is it a day for saving life or is it a day for taking life? Well, if the atmosphere were tense, look at it now. They were silent. They're not going to give him an answer. But then verse 5, he looked round at them with anger. Can you feel it? This is so tense, isn't it? This is eyeball to eyeball. He looked round at them with anger, grieved at the hardness of their heart. Religious men with hearts of stone. What do they care about this man? Just so long as the ambulance doesn't stop on the double yellow lines. And he said to the man, stretch out your hand. He stretched it out. And his hand was restored. Jesus speaks, and the hand that cannot be stretched is stretched out. And it's restored. The word of his power. And of course, it's not just a hand restored, is it? It's a life restored. And you look at that and you say, isn't that wonderful? Imagine it took place here. Just imagine it. Wonderful. But look at the reaction of these religious men. This is the golden age of religion. Look at their reaction. Verse 6, the Pharisees went out and immediately held counsel with the Herodians against him, how to destroy him. So while Jesus is saving life on the Sabbath, they use the Sabbath to destroy life. And it's this, isn't it? The Pharisees went out and immediately held counsel with the Herodians, the political people, against him, how to destroy him. It's like UKIP going into coalition with the Green Party. The ultra-religious teaming up with the political fixers. And they're looking for that moment. And when the moment comes, we're going to silence this Jesus forever. You see, chapter 2, verse 20, the days will come when the bridegroom is taken away. And the plotting has already begun. So back to our question. What kind of religion is this Jesus movement? Well, by the time we come to episode 3, we discover it's no religion at all. Far from Jesus being just another religious teacher, the leader of just another religious movement, he's nothing of the sort. He's raised these massive questions about his identity, that he's the bridegroom, that he's the king to end all kings, on a mission to set up his kingdom. And that he is Lord of the Sabbath, Lord of the rest, the one who gives the Sabbath, the one who made all things. And here he is stepping down into the muck of this world. It is no religion at all. In fact, where religion and Jesus touch, religion just shatters into pieces, like that new cloth on the old cloth, like the new wine into old wineskins. It's just an explosive mixture. The two can't survive together. Now, my friend, have you seen that? This world is full of religion. Because people know there's more to life, don't they, than what you see and touch. And you probably know that too. Of course there's more to life than what I can see and touch. And we sense, don't we, that behind it all there's some power. Maybe behind it all is some God. And religion is our attempt to break on through to the other side. It's our attempt to connect with God. So people join a group and they keep the rules of the group. Or people embark upon a spiritual journey and they follow the steps. We follow a way of life. And says religion, if I do the right thing in the right way at the right time, then I'll be okay. I'll connect with whatever is on the other side. I'll find favor. I'll be accepted. Maybe I'll even go to heaven. I'll find rest. Religion. Even the non-religious are religious, aren't they? We all have our teachings. We all have our gurus. We all have the right things to do and the right group to belong to. Is Jesus just another version of that? Well, three episodes, the answer comes back a resounding no. He doesn't set before us the religious life. He doesn't give us impossible burdens and things to do to reach the other side. You know, the God who sets the bar so high that only a few can make it. The God, as it were, whose interest we have to win. Whose acceptance, as it were, we have to gain. We have to win God over by doing the right things. And a God for whom we'll never be anything more than just simply his servants. When I left the Roman Catholic Church, I spent half a day debating with a Catholic theologian called Simon Tugwell. At the end of all our discussions, he said this. He said, after a life of service to God, will I go to heaven? I don't know. I don't know whether I will have done enough. Now, what sort of religion is that? What sort of God is that? Years of desperate service, trying to gain his acceptance. Doing the right thing at the right time, in the right place. Hoping that I've done enough. But I won't know until Judgment Day. But look at Mark's Gospel. Here is God himself among us. And he doesn't look very religious, does he? At least not to religious eyes. This is the God whose first thought is not to condemn, but to save. Wasn't that what we learned several weeks ago? The paralytic man, what does he say? My son, your sins are forgiven you. And this is the God who seeks out the company of bad, irreligious people. Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick, I came not to call the righteous, but sinners. This is the God who's not bad-tempered. He says, if you're in my presence, we feast. If you come to me, we rejoice. A God who is grieved at hard hearts. The God who's come not to destroy, but to save. And the God who has come to rescue his loving commands from unloving hands. This is the God who gives us rest. He is Lord of the Sabbath, Lord of the rest. Religion is not the answer. What kind of religion is Christianity? The answer comes back loud and clear. It's no religion at all. Jesus doesn't call us to a way of life. It's a call to love and trust and know and enjoy and follow a wonderful person, Jesus Christ. It's not about religion. It's about a relationship. Yusei Sakai was a Japanese monk. He died just a few weeks ago. One of only a handful of men, I'm going to pronounce this wrong, but I'm sure you don't know how to pronounce it either. One of only a handful of men to complete what's called the Seniki Kaihogyo. Does that sound right? It's a 7-year quest for enlightenment where you perform acts of ascetic self-denial, ascetic devotion to Buddha. In the 7th and final year, Sakyai, the monk, he had to go on a pilgrimage through the mountains surrounding his temple. He had to walk 51 miles a day. Could you do that? 51 miles a day on your pilgrimage. Okay, well that's the easy bit. If for any reason he failed to complete a day, maybe he got a blister or he twisted his ankle, if he, for any reason, he failed to complete a day, he would have to commit suicide. 51 miles a day, fail one day, you commit suicide. So every day he walked with a rope and a knife, ready to kill himself should he fail. Well, he didn't fail. But what did it prove? That's religion, isn't it? It just tests the bounds of your endurance. What we feel we have to do in order to, as it were, break on through to whatever on the other side. What I have to do to find God, to find acceptance. Maybe what I have to do at the end of the day to find rest. And Jesus strides in and he says, look, I've come to blow religion apart. This is new wine. You don't put it into old, tired, brittle, religious wineskins. Your own doing, living the life. So Jesus, it's not the way. Because whatever you do, it's never going to come up to God's standards, is it? You know that. And whatever you do, it's never going to make amends for the sinful, rubbish life that we all live. Of course not. Which is why, says Jesus, I've come. I've come to do what you could never do. Not religion. Because religion can't do it. I've come to do what you can't do. So through me, you can be forgiven. Through me, you can find forgiveness. You can enjoy peace of God. With God, you can enjoy the calm of sins forgiven. Through me, you can know true and real and felt joy. And through me, that desperate, empty strivings, I am the one to give you rest. You see, the bridegroom was taken away. He was nailed to a cross. And having lived that perfect life I could never live, he died the punishing death for sin that I deserve to die. He did it all. So that all who trust in Jesus, needing no perfect life to live, and no punishing death to die, they can enjoy, we can enjoy, I can enjoy peace with God. Not religion. Jesus Christ, the Jesus who does it all. Do you want a feast with the bridegroom? Do you want to serve the King to end all kings? Do you want to find rest, rest for your soul? Do you want a new beginning? New wine in new wineskins. Do you want to break on through to the other side? Well, my friend, the answer is not religion. That will keep you rooted firmly on this side. The answer is a relationship. The answer is knowing Jesus Christ. And that's why we can say, if you come to Jesus, you'll break on through. You'll know the God who made you. You'll find him. Because Jesus is the one who spans the gulf. Or maybe even as you hear that, you say, well, I can't. Well, can a man with a withered hand stretch it out? Of course he can't. It's ridiculous, isn't it? When Christ says to him, stretch out your hand, but it's withered. How can I stretch out my hand? But he hears the voice of Jesus, and he does. And his hand is made whole. There's power in the command, you see. Everything you need, you find with Jesus Christ. So don't stand here and say, I can't, because that's how religious people think. What must I do? Well, I can't do that. That's the way religion talks. I can't do that. I can't achieve that. It's simply come to him. Fall upon his kind arms. Lord, forgive me. Lord, change me. Lord, save me. Or maybe say, well, I can't do that. Well, then even say, then, Lord, don't let me stop you from saving me. Save me in spite of me. Because Jesus does it all. And if you say, well, what kind of religion is that? The answer is, it's no religion at all.